I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
What I'm going to be curious to see is what guys look like when the ball's not in their hands on offense, okay? Yeah, you're right. We have a lot of weapons, and so how are you going to run your route when you might not be number one in the progression, okay? How are you going to block for your teammate when he has the ball? Because if you do those things right, then as a coaching staff, we're going to want to get you the ball a little bit more.
We are talking to Robert Mays of the Athletic Football Show, kind enough to join us for another segment here on Rahimi Harris and Mark Rohde on The Score. And I think that's a good place to pick up where we left off, is that concept, Robert, of Ben Johnson sending messages, because I think we all heard that as well. And we saw it a little bit in how they drafted too.
Yeah, I think so many of these things, maybe I'm reading too much into it. It feels like he's talking directly to DJ Moore every single time he's at the podium, which maybe is what you need. Like, I think that culture in the NFL is often set by your best players, your highest drafted players, your most impactful players. And when those guys don't play a certain way, it can bleed into everything else. And I think the Bears have made a pretty big commitment to who DJ Moore is within the context of the organization, and getting the most out of somebody like that, I think, would go a long way in making everything feel a little bit different.
I agree with you. I mean, I think of DJ a lot throughout this whole process. I want to go back really quickly back to Colston Loveland. Was it Ben, you said the souped up Matt LaPorta. Was that a Ben Johnson line?
No, I said that you're before saying the draft. That. Yeah, the first time I watched him, it just, you watch the route running in the open field and just kind of the way that he moves and the fact that you can line him up all over the place. And he's bigger. I think that he's a little bit more explosive. Like, Sam LaPorta was the 34th pick in the draft, right? Yeah. And so you draft the guy 10th overall, you hope he's a souped up version of that guy as a prospect. And then, but I believe Ben Johnson was on the record after the draft and saying that Colston Loveland reminded him of Sam LaPorta. I think he said that to Colston Loveland.
He did, so, yeah. That's why I was trying not to conflate what you had said with what he had said.
This was independent. Yeah. It was the first guy that came to mind when I watched him. You know, the Fresno State game that he played, and then a couple other games that he played last year. I was like, that's just Sam LaPorta with like another inch and a half and more explosiveness.
And I know things got to happen, and it has to actually happen on the field, so you think the sky is the limit for this guy.
I think he has a high upside. Yeah. I think that if you look at the movement skills, again, that Fresno State game early in the season for Michigan this year, they were just using him like a wide receiver. And so you watch some of the route running ability, and then the body control is extremely impressive. Like, he'll make some twisting catches up the sideline. Tight end is always a dicey proposition in the first round. I think that a little bit we're getting ahead of ourselves with him and Warren in terms of what they're going to be early because of what Brock Bowers did last year. History will tell you that first round tight ends, it's a dicey place to draft those guys. But in this draft specifically, I think you can make a solid case that he had as much upside as any player they could have taken there.
You don't want it to be Adam Shaheen. I'm sorry I did it. I brought up that name.
I'm sorry.
Hold on. I want to get back to DJ Moore, because the way you mentioned him and you felt like he was talking specifically with him, I think the thing with the way I look at DJ Moore, obviously they went out, they traded for him, they gave him the extension, and he's played now 7 seasons in the NFL. He's never been on a team with a winning record. So I see him as this sort of hinge that if he's bought in, fully committed, there's no questionable plays in the middle of games where people are trying to figure out, wait, did he just quit on that play? Was he hurt? What's going on? That seems to be like one of these players. It's him, Tyreek Stevenson, where I'm going to be able to tell a lot about where this team is culture-wise by the way these guys are performing and the way they're acting as well. Is that a fair thing to say?
I absolutely think it's a fair thing to say. The people have said this, and this is always what I look for too. Culture is how well your wide receivers block and how well your DBs tackle. That's what culture is. Like, if you want to feel whether a team is bought in, those are the first two things that you should look at. And I would just encourage people to go look at what DJ Moore was doing sometimes when he didn't have the ball last year, and whether or not you think the culture was healthy in Chicago.
I mean, one was blatant. I mean, where he steps
there were a lot of blatant ones. The one that everyone remembers was there, but you could probably pick out 20 examples over the course of the year where something was left wanting in those moments.
And to your other point, I remember a particular, there was a running play, I think, in the Southwest somewhere before like halftime where people weren't tackling. Is that
are you talking about Oscar DiMercato running for 2,000 yards in the first half?
To give him his respect, that'd be Amari to you, by the way. Amari DiMercato.
Amari.
Isn't it Amari or is it Oscar?
No, oh, it's okay. Amari. Did she say Oscar?
Yeah. You know who I was? I was in baseball brain. I think I was in baseball.
That's okay. I just like it.
Thank you.
Oscar was like traumatic to me. Sox? So
Oscar Mercado.
Yeah.
I remember tweeting after that game, after the Cardinals game, that it was the low point of the Eberflus era, and then the New England game happened the week after.
That's crazy, right?
Yeah. At home. Yeah.
Because you were thinking, okay, they're going back home. They're going to get it together and at least put up a fight at home. When I say they rolled over and died at home, it was amazing because I was like, I didn't think that was possible in that manner.
They were the worst team in the NFL at that point, the Patriots, weren't they?
They had like 30
sacks on the year. They had 9 of them in that game.
Unbelievable.
It's brutal. I mean, and I honestly appreciated that day because sometimes you hem and you haw about what teams should do, right? It's like, oh, should they move on from this guy? Should they not? And then that game happens. It's like, well, he's getting fired tomorrow. Like, there's nothing else you can do. Like, that coaching staff can't come back
and
coach the offense again. The offensive coordinator did.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hey, the Bears did business. I got no criticism. They fired a head coach for the first time in their history, and they got rid of the offensive coordinator. So
I also think it's worth asking, Robert, because you're so tapped in into the rest of the league, what the viewpoint was at that time of the failure that was going on here.
I think that there was a concern heading into the season. It was the concern that I had in that bringing Eberflus back and going out and getting a guy like Shane Waldron, you're shooting to be like the 15th best offense in the NFL. And I just don't think that's what you should be shooting for. It was my problem with their process in the moment. I think you don't move on from coaches when you think that you're headed in the right direction and you think that it would be more disruptive to move on than it would be to keep somebody. And I just don't think that was the case when you're drafting a quarterback number one overall. Like, the defense making strides in the back half of the 2023 season is not a good enough reason to bring back a defensive-minded head coach who has shown an inability to find the right play caller with a guy that you've been maneuvering to get with a number one overall pick for 2 years. So they've hopefully kind of made up for that sin in the way that they've handled this offseason, but there was really no reason that Ben Johnson couldn't have been here the year before. Like, that was an option, and I think it's one they probably should have explored, and I think other people did too.
I'm sorry, I was distracted because I was looking at the restaurant database because I'm getting ready to go into that portion. I want y'all to exhaust some of the football stuff before I turn the page, though.
Okay, I'll start. The retirement of Derek Carr, and I said to you during the break, I feel like both Carr brothers have had unsatisfying career arcs when it came to quarterbacking in the NFL.
I think for David Carr, that's absolutely the case. When you're the number one pick, and obviously, I remember that. You remember that ESPN, it was an ESPN commercial for the NFL draft. I think it was in either 2004, 2005. And they had photoshopped out his offensive line. And it was, the tagline was like, what does your team need this offseason? And it was based on Derek Carr or David Carr's rookie season. So I think that was always kind of doomed from the start, just based on what the Texans were working with early on. With Derek Carr, I think it's more complicated than that. Like, Derek Carr, we were talking about it during the break. He's 22nd all time in passing yards. He had 11 seasons. He's made $200 million playing football. As a second round pick, if you look at the history of second round quarterbacks, it's not very good. Like, it's hard to find quarterbacks in that range of the draft. So I think in some ways, Derek Carr was better than what his draft slot would dictate. But I think in others, and the two teams I would go back to, I actually really enjoyed the 2020 and 2021 Raiders teams with John Gruden as the coach. They slung the ball around. It was an aggressive offense. It was very fun. And I think part of my experience and just the way I look at Derek Carr is, why couldn't have it all been like that? Like, why couldn't he been in these situations where he was pushing the ball down the field a little bit more? He's kind of this paradox of a player where he's got a ton of arm. He can really, really push the ball downfield, but the uneasiness and the skittishness in the pocket and his unwillingness to kind of stand in and do that kind of stuff, I think probably took away from what he could have actually been.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I think the thing with David Carr that amazed me was he just had no chance early on. He has two of the top three most sack seasons, including 76 times his rookie year. 76 times in a 16-game season.
Do you think it didn't come to mind when we were watching last season?
Yeah, yeah. Because Caleb Williams tied his other mark of 68, that number that hangs over us. And I will be happy if Caleb Williams just takes less than 40 sacks this year.
That would be a huge step in the right direction.
That would be remarkable. And then the other quarterback question I have is not about the Giants room, which I think somebody should do a show on. But it's what do you think happens to Aaron Rodgers?
I think he probably ends up in Pittsburgh. I just don't know what their other options are at this point other than trading for Kirk Cousins. And at this point, I think them, all things being equal, being able to just sign Aaron Rodgers outright versus having to give up something in next year's draft for Cousins when you want to maintain as much ammo as you possibly can because of what you're probably going to have to do to find a quarterback, I can understand why they think Rodgers is the more attractive option.
Any chance you think he'll just walk away?
Sure.
Yeah.
Like I don't.
I'm leaning more and more towards retirement every day.
And if that's the case, then I think that Cousins is the thing they have to do because I feel like they have to try to salvage the season in some way if they can. And he is still available.
We're talking football with Robert Mays of the Athletic Football Show here on Raheemy Harris and Mark Grody on the score. And Grotz, I know you've got a thought.
Well, I just have one question. And I know I'm going to say the name of this person. And everybody's going to go crazy. But I'll just ask it. Do you think Bill Belichick will ever coach in the NFL again?
No.
No. He's done.
I don't think so. I mean, I feel like the league kind of told them what they thought of him this offseason. Mm-hmm. And it's not surprising to me. And it's not surprising to me on a few different levels. I just think that the way modern NFL coaches work, it's really, really hard to consolidate that level of power throughout the entire organization. And it's really hard to consolidate that level of power throughout the entire organization when you've been bad at a lot of the stuff. Right? If player acquisition has been bad, if staffing has been bad. I just don't think people want to make that bargain with Bill Belichick at this point in his career. Like the idea that you would hire Bill Belichick and then Matt Patricia and Josh McDaniels and the entire band would be coming with him. It's not something I would want to sign up for right now.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm looking at the Maze restaurant list.
There we go.
Just pinned to the top of your Twitter profile. There are 103 restaurants that are listed.
Updates coming this week.
Updates really? Are coming this week. Okay.
Updates coming this week.
Is it the Beast? Oh, wait. Yeah, that's another
this
thing.
Is the Beast of Chicago restaurants.
So what I want to know is of these restaurants, if I just had to go, I have somebody in town, and I just have to try one of these restaurants.
This is way too simple of a question. I need like 10 more details.
I'll give you details. I'll give you details. Let's scratch some cuisines off.
Okay.
Okay, so we're going to say no sushi.
Okay.
I knew that was going to be your response. We're also going to say, let's say no Chinese. No, yeah, actually, we'll just narrow it down to one genre. Italian. Give me your top Italian restaurant in the city of Chicago.
I mean, it's not that creative to say, but I think Monteverde is still probably the place I would go for Italian.
I've been there,
and that's the problem is with that, you have to get so far ahead of it when it comes to reservations that it can be a little bit tough. Other than that, like I like Daisy's still. Daisy's is a local neighborhood restaurant for me. I live in Logan Square, and so I've been there a million different times. I think that's a good pasta place. I'm trying to think of other good Italian. But we don't go out for Italian that much, if I'm being honest. If you look at that list, there is not a ton of Italian places on there.
Is there one that would go, because you don't really have any, I'm from the South, you don't really have any like super comfort food on here. So what is the most comfort foodish that you would go off your list?
Like fried chicken?
That could qualify, yeah.
Just like, well, Southern food in general, like if you want to go down and get, I mean, Virtue to me is like one of the best dinners in the entire city down
there
in
too.
Park.
Okay, I feel like I'm doing well with this
Virtue's
list.
Really, really good. There are a lot of places I haven't been that I want to go. Like, I actually haven't been to Big Jones. I haven't been to Luella's Southern Kitchen. I haven't been down to Rue.
Big Jones is great.
So all of those places are spots I actually want to hit. Comfort food, other than that, like, I'm trying to conceive of like what I would think of as comfort food.
Well, I like good dumplings. What's the best dumplings?
QXY is where I would go for dumplings.
Okay.
Down in Chinatown.
All right.
They've got a ton of really, really good ones. That's probably the place I would recommend the most for that.
I like the organization and also the versatility of this list.
There's a lot of different ways you can go with it. There's a ton of different ways that you can go with it. I try to have something for everybody depending on like what the occasion is, right? Like if you want to go big, there's some big spots on there. If you want to have a really, really casual place or like, you know, tacos, there's a lot of taco places on there. So I was getting so many questions from people.
I like tacos.
There's a lot of good tacos in Chicago. There's a lot of good Mexican food in Chicago. I was getting a lot of messages from people. They'd be like, where should I go eat?
And I was that's like, just too vague.
And I was like, well, here's 150 places. Like, let me know where you end up.
What's the Maze? Do you have a top five? Can you narrow it down to five?
Ooh, the places that
five,
I
five, and then there's seven. I'm not going to be mad.
So in terms of like my if I had an unlimited budget, where I would go eat in Chicago, Oreo is still like my favorite like occasion type of place. I've been to most of the big ones here, and that is still like the most memorable meal I've had in Chicago in a long time. When I have people come from out of town, like brunch at Lulu Cafe is like a pretty standard thing, especially as you get into the summer. The Logan Square Farmers Market is right outside, so there's no reservations. So you go put your name in, and then you can just walk the farmers market for an hour, go pop in for brunch. They have a standard brunch menu, but then they have specials every day and so or every week. And so we just get everything on the specials menu. And so it's a different meal every time we go.
I like that.
I had people in town for work last a couple weeks ago for the draft. And if you need something that you can get a reservation, it's classic, it's reliable. Avec is still awesome. Like, it's been there for 25 years. It is so, so, so good. Boca is really underrated in terms of, like, I think the Michelin star places. Like, we went there for the first time last year for my wife's birthday and really enjoyed it. Elska is great. And then in my neighborhood, Giant and Mitokai are, like, two of my favorites. I absolutely love Giant. That's Giant the closest restaurant to my house.
Giant is outstanding.
So, yeah, it's hard to list off a bunch of them. But Hai Su Vietnamese is fantastic. It's down in Pilsen. Marisco San Pedro, which is, like, a... Marisco's place, it's just all Mexican seafood, is down there in Pilsen now. It's in the old Talia Hall, or it's in the old Dusex space in, yes, Talia Hall.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, you could never get to all the places you wanted to get to, I guess is what I would say.
I got to get to work. Robert Mays, thank you so much for not only your football thoughts, but your Chicago restaurant thoughts as well. Anything else you need to keep the people noted of before you get out of here?
The Athletic Football Show. It's available wherever you get your podcasts. We do it more often than we should in the offseason, so it's available to you.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.